right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night. We are taking your phone calls, as always, at 812-333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight as we are a day away from the NBA draft. The Pacers made a move today. They held on to their number 20 overall pick, but they made a move for a point guard and bring another local boy home as they acquire, or will be acquiring eventually, Jeff Teague from the Atlanta Hawks. They are sending George Hill to the Utah Jazz, and Utah is sending their number 12 overall pick to Atlanta. That is the trade, the pending trade as far as we know it for now. So big news in Pacerland as George Hill's been here for 5 years, Broad Ripple product, and was an excellent fit for the team back when they had other guys playing other roles and kind of picking up the scoring where George was not a particularly high volume scorer. But Glass, we talked about needing a point guard or wanting a point guard for this team, a guy to distribute to the other players, maybe a guy that could get to the bucket more so than George Hill could. Jeff Teague is a 40% three-point shooter last year. He doesn't throw up eight a game, but he does shoot it at a 40% clip. He's a good free-throw shooter. He does get to the lane. I think I read he's one of the top 5 or 10 players in the NBA as far as drives are concerned at point guard position. So he does that quite a bit also. So he's a versatile point guard. He's a more of a scoring point guard and an assist guy than George Hill. I'm not sure his defense is going to be quite the same, but we've talked about this. Turning into a scoring league, you want a scoring guy. Here you go at that point guard position. You've got the kind of the opposite of what you had in George Hill.
Hard to argue with. And with Teague, the other part is he's played in playoff games with the Hawks here recently as well, so it's not a big jump for him into a winning culture where you wonder, hey, how's he going to fit in with guys that they expect big things from. That's a good use. He's 28, so you don't really get tremendously younger at that position because I think it's almost like for like in the age group there. But again, you get a guy that can put the ball in the basket, and is that the best thing you need? Well, in this league, as you mentioned, and I think that's accurate, you have to put the ball in the hoop to get it rolling. And Teague has averaged over 14 points for the last 4 straight years. I mean, he's right around 16. He's at 14.6 is his worst and 16.5 is his best, and he's everything else in between there. So it's a pretty steady hand and a pretty steady expectation. He's never shot worse than 83% from the line. That doesn't hurt you in the last few years as well. And he plays. He plays a ton of games. His worst season in the career is 66 games. He's played 70 or more every other season. So he's durable. He's been there. He's in his prime. And the other part, and you didn't leave out, you didn't mention, the Pacers are looking to extend him. He has one year left on his deal. So this is not a let's throw the dice and see what happens. This is going to be a cornerstone 4-5-6 year contract where Teague's going to play into that 32, 33.
And yeah, he's 28 age right now. So he's right in the middle of kind of all the guys you've got on this roster.
And that's what you need. And again, you put more guys around George, you can put the ball in the basket. You don't have to be in a elite defender to be any good in the NBA. You just have to be pesky. You have to be in the right spot. You have to give effort. We've seen that. This isn't Kyrie Irving. We're not making it out to be Kyrie Irving, but Teague can play, and he plays a ton of games for the Hawks, and he starts every game but what? One this year, one last year, and 2 4 years ago. He starts, he plays. He's a gamer. He's an NBA guy that goes every night and plays, you know, about 30 minutes a game. It was a convenience thing. You had to do something with the Pacers to move it around because what they have didn't move in the right direction last year. And that's not the free agent move of what are you going to do with Solomon Hill or Jan Mahimi. That's not it. This was something that they did on their accord, forcing themselves into a situation they get. The only thing you might not like about Teague is he a big enough guy, 6'2". I mean, Hill was a little bit bigger than that.
They say he's 6'3", so and about the same weight.
Right.
He looked bigger. I mean, there's no question about
again,
that.
Again, but you upgrade offensively. What do you trade out defensively? Well, it doesn't matter who you're guarding if you're down 15 points in the fourth quarter. Doesn't matter. You've got to have guys that can score to get you back in games.
And you've got to be more versatile. And this team is just, I mean, George Hill, we've talked about this.
George Hill was a great servant for the Pacers.
He was great for the Pacers. And he was great when they had guys like Hibbert and they had David West and Paul George, of course, was in there. And even Lance Stephenson could get some points. And you could have him be a complimentary guy. And he would have been great on this team if he was your point guard or your second team. And he could be with Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey and those guys and make them go. But he wasn't right for this team, which needs more production out of that spot.
And the other point you like about it, and I mentioned it, he plays. He doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any bad wheels or any lingering injuries, or he doesn't miss extended periods of time when you're playing 70 or more games. Yeah. Remember, there's only 82 in a season. If you're playing 79, 73, 78, whatever that is the last few years, it's durable. Mm-hmm. And durability is a good thing because the last thing the Pacers need is to be piecing lineups together with duct tape. So it's an upgrade. It's an Indianapolis kid. That will immediately get the fans on your side. The fans that are upset that George Hill has left, that's completely understandable. Mm-hmm. The Pacers did make a move for George Hill. They brought him in. They tried it. Didn't work. Simple as that. Didn't need what they wanted to do.
It worked for a few years.
But bringing in a guy that's from Indianapolis to replace a guy from Indianapolis, the yelling and screaming isn't going to be nearly as loud as it would be if you moved him for a second round pick and an expiring contract.
No, and he has stated that he'd like to be in Indiana at some point in time, so he's going to be happy here, it sounds like. Hopefully they can come to some kind of extension that makes this easy and palatable for both sides. But again, what you get is you get more of a scoring punch, and that is what the Pacers needed. They needed versatility there. We saw in the playoffs, it was Paul George and not a lot else. Other guys were not firing.
That's interesting about this pick, too. He's a veteran, 28-year-old. Yeah. The guy's been in the league since he's 19, so do the math on that. He's been in the league 8 years. So, again, this isn't somebody you're going to have to help grow up, monitor off the court, make sure he's coming to practice, make sure he's not being goofy after practice. He knows Indianapolis. He knows what he's getting into. It's not going to be a culture shock. There's too many positive boxes to check here, and I think that's what makes it a good deal for the Pacers. Yes, you're sad to see George Hill go. I get it. I like the move to the offensive side of things. I like the natural fit for an Indianapolis kid. There's not many of them to choose from, by the way, so if you get a kid that can do that. I went to Pike High School, obviously. Again, he has played in the league 8 years, and he plays – that's the great thing. Even his rookie season, when he – I thought he came out when he was 19. He didn't come out. He was 19th pick. 19th pick, excuse me, overall. Yeah. Age 21 when he came out. So, again, 66 games is his worst. He hasn't played less than 70 in six of those seven seasons.
Yeah.
That tells you he gets on the court, he stays on the court, mm-hmm. and he's productive on the court. And that's exactly what the Pacers need. But – here's the thing. What the Pacers need is transition from what's on paper to making that happen on the court. We've seen Monte Ellis's numbers. We went through this exact time last year. We talked about how this we thought would be positive because of what he would bring to this, and then you saw that didn't happen. Does this hurt Ellis more because there's another player in the backcourt that's going to demand the ball, need the ball, shoot the ball, need to score as much?
Right.
Interesting point. I'd rather have more offensive guys and figure out how to use them than only have 2.5 offensive guys, and they have to fire most nights.
Well, I mean, what you've seen with the Golden State Warriors as the example that everybody uses as the shining example, of course, right now, is if you throw a bunch of guys out there that can all score if they need to, and you tell them if you space the floor, if you move, and if you share the ball, you'll all end up scoring, you'll all end up looking great, and you'll have chances to win trophies. The key there is getting them all to buy into that. So that now is the question. How do you get this group of guys to buy into that? Because adding more scorers to a team that needs scorers is a good thing. I don't care what you say about it. Then it just becomes dealing with the egos and, as you said, the ball. The nice thing about Jeff Teague compared to George Hill, you double your assist ratio, at least according to last year. So this is a guy that is more of a true point guard from that standpoint. Yes, he's a scoring true point guard, but he does distribute the ball more. So you got a guy who's more apt to be a playmaker with the ball and get other guys involved. It's not to say George Hill was selfish with the ball. He wasn't. That wasn't really his game to be a distributor. This guy is more of a distributor, can get more people involved in better spots. That for this team, again, does that help Monte Ellis? I mean, that is a fascinating question. It really is. Do you get these guys to all buy off on the idea that they can all be successful by sharing it, whether Jeff needs some shots or Monte needs some shots or whatever? Does it help Monte? Does he get more angry because he doesn't get the ball as much? I'd like to think he can get the ball to Monte in better spots.
Two of the last 3 years, Teague has beat his average in the playoffs. He's scored more than he averaged during the regular season, two of the last three.
Yeah.
So that tells you when the lights are on, he can get after it a little bit. That was the other knock on Ellis when Jan Mahimi scored more points in a seven-game series in one of the games than Ellis is.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder. So you get help in both ways. Offensively, you get help with experience. You get help with a guy who's been in playoff basketball. Those are three check marks that are good. Throw in he's an Indianapolis kid. Throw in you don't have to explain to him why Indianapolis is great. Sell him on it.
Right.
He already knows that. And that should be a comfortable landing spot for him. Now, make it translate on the court, because without that, we could sit here and talk about box scores and line scores till we're blue in the face. Doesn't matter if the Pacers don't win, like for like and money on that, so that's not going to hurt them cap-wise, even though the cap is going up. So a little fresh blood, a little fresh face, a little bounce in the step offensively, and hopefully that is what the spark this offense needs.
And it gives Nate McMillan a new piece to play with, and maybe a new message comes along with it, including a draft pick, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. Got to take a quick break, though. 812-333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is our phone number. Programming note for you, we got Reds baseball the rest of the week. 8 o'clock tonight as they are in Texas. And then 7 o'clock Friday and Saturday at home to San Diego. And 4 o'clock Saturday against San Diego here on WGCL.
And Reds fans, don't forget, you can register at Royal South Toyota Scion, 3115 South Walnut, to win a Reds Family 4-pack. The next drawing will take place on Tuesday, July 12th at 4 p.m. One entry per family, please. If you win, you get a family 4-pack of tickets to the Reds and Dodgers. Terry, you are ineligible to win because you are a worker here at the station. August 21st is that game. WGCL will notify the lucky winner after the drawing, so stop by and say hello. Royal South Toyota Scion, our proud sponsor of Cincinnati Reds baseball, your exclusive home for Reds baseball in Monroe County here at WGCL. And Dave and I, at the 6:45 break, will give away a pair of tickets, Reds and Cubs, next week in Cincinnati. We've got a Tuesday night game or a Wednesday noon 30 game. You can pick whichever one that is. We'll do that in about 25 minutes. Call in and win those. So pay attention. A lot of Red stuff going on. A lot of ways to win. A lot of ways to get to the Great American Ballpark. One of the best places to see baseball and obviously to see the Cincinnati Reds.
So looking at the Pacers, they have the number 20 pick in tomorrow night's NBA draft. Of course, point guard was going to be at the top of their list. You'd be very surprised if point guard is still at the top of their list, given you just brought in Jeff Teague. Certainly maybe a second round, who knows, pick up later. But now you can look a different direction. So the question is, with this Pacers team, with Larry Bird talking about how he wants to be small and wants to score and wants to get up and down the court, you know, you start to narrow into what you think this team looks like. And what this team looks like on paper right now is Jeff Teague and Paul George and Monte Ellis in particular as being guys that are on the floor all the time, along with Miles Turner. So does that make Miles Turner your four? Does that make him your five? Chances are you're looking at a big at this point in time of some sort. It's got to be complementary to those two guys. Miles Turner can pull away from the basket and can shoot from outside. He can also be a rebounding guy. So, you know, the common wisdom would tell you if you want a perfect fit for that lineup, you want a big guy that can hit the boards but can also step out and hit some three-pointers and maybe stretch the floor a little bit, because you know Miles and Paul George are going to want to be inside also, and Jeff Teague is, of course, as we said, one of the better penetrating point guards in the league, or at least one of the more often penetrating point guards in the league. So big at this point, shooting big at this point, do you look on your second team? I think you got to find a guy or try to find a guy that fits with that first team. Intriguing prospect that gets mentioned isn't that position, but it's a guy that we've watched for 4 years absolutely tear up the Big Ten for most of it, and that's Denzel Valentine has been mentioned out there. I don't know if the guy lasts till 20, but Glass, this is the classic idea of if he's there, not a need pick necessarily, but it'd be hard to turn out a guy that's that versatile and that good, at least according to what we've seen.
And the bad news is the Draymond Green effect as well. Everybody's still pointing to how many teams passed up on him to let him go by. So the interesting part for the Pacers in all of this is going to be, now do you go into that quote-unquote best player available because you think you've got three offensive pieces that you can trust and move on? Or do you sit in and say, well, someone's going to overpay Mahimi. Is it going to be us, or are we going to take a chance and find a guy like that? I don't know if you find a guy like that at 20. Do you find a guy like Bryce Johnson, who does essentially the same stuff as Miles Turner does? Do you put those two guys side by side and go with safety and young numbers there? I don't have a huge problem with that. Or do you go for more of a meaner guy like the Bento from Providence? Guy's going to get you a lot of rebounds. Guy's a little bit tougher, a little bit more physical. What's the balance going to be there? I think that's a very interesting question. The interesting part of the Pacers draft, whatever you want to call this, strategy, schematics, whatever, is if you looked at the aggregate of who the experts think they are going to pick, if you read 20 different publications, you're going to see 16 different guys.
Yeah, they're all over the
there's
map
a couple
right now.
Couple,
which is understandable.
Well, there's a not with, I don't think having, if you have 20 publications and they have 16 different players, that doesn't sound to be any kind of consensus.
Well,
only
right.
A couple of matched up there. So what
it's
is that
kind of draft? Nobody's sure what's going to happen.
What does it tell you? Well, it tells you that there isn't that guy there that you absolutely have to have. And to help you, do you want to go four-year guy? You've tried that with Tyler Hansbrough. Mm-hmm. Tyler Hansbrough destroyed the ACC.
Yeah.
Destroyed it.
Yeah.
Hand over fist, beat it up badly. Do you go that route? Bryce Johnson's a four-year player.
Yep.
Is that something you want to get into? Do you want to go into another guard, another backcourt heavy spot if you find a guy that falls to you? I can't even list half the guys. They've brought in everybody to work out for them. Everybody. So the good news is they've done their homework. And if anybody tells you they know right now, well, that's Larry Bird has made some of the most interesting picks over the last 15 years in and out. So if you think you got him figured out, good luck with that, because I'm not buying it. I'll be just as interested to see what you're going, what everybody's going to see tomorrow night with it. But if I'm the Pacers, how many big guys do you find that come into the league and play right away? I'm going skill. I'm staying skill. I can find guys in free agency that can take up space and get in the way. Bismack Biyombo is a great example of that. Guy did grabbed rebounds in Charlotte, didn't do much anything else. His contract ended, free agent. Toronto takes a chance on him, signs him for 1 year and $3 million. That worked out pretty well. He's got a player option for this year. What do you think he's going to do? I don't think the Pacers need to pay $16 million a year for Bismack Biyombo.
Well, of course not.
But the cap does go up. You do have some room and some flexibility there. But I think if I'm the Pacers, I surround Paul George with offensive pieces and then build around him defensively in other avenues, because it's an offensive game. Mm-hmm. The Cavaliers didn't beat the Warriors because they guarded them better. They beat them because they scored more points. And what does that mean? The best scoring team in basketball was outscored by Cleveland.
Yeah.
Every time you looked, it's 110, 108. Right.
Cleveland had to step up their offensive game.
They didn't
game, no
win
question.
These games 78-74 no, is my point.
That's exactly
so
right.
You
Cleveland
have to,
stepped up their offensive game.
And who's the world champions?
Yeah.
They're in your division.
Right.
So right. if you want to get at the table, you want to get in that neighborhood, and if you want to poke the bear and get after the bear, you better have guys who can put the ball in the basket. And that's what I think the Pacers need to do. I don't want some kind of project-y type guy like a Diamond Stone where you hope he works out. Why? Because, again, that's 4 years in Paul George's prime. That right. If you don't get a player that doesn't work out, you've got to go get him somewhere else.
Well,
so maybe
be
more of a proven quantity, but a guy that can score. And that makes sense. That's Johnson. That's you know, Bentel to a degree. He got 40-something in it. Didn't he get 40-something in an ACC tournament? Something ridiculous.
Yeah, there's some names that are listed. I'm
go
just
ahead,
looking
throw
at NBA.com.
Throw them out here. I'll give you some.
Mock draft here recently in the neighborhood of 20. Malachi Richardson, who we saw tear up the late season. Demetrius Jackson, here's a point guard.
He's all,
do you
don't
need a second
now.
Team now? No. I don't think you do. No. I mean, I think you can go a lot more directions.
Unless you pick him for somebody else that moves you up
well,
in a
sure.
position. But that's
sure. But then,
that's
you,
right.
yeah, that's a little different. But yeah, I understand. Again, Denzel Valentine. Again, who around here in Bloomington, Indiana wouldn't love to see the Pacers with Denzel Valentine after watching him forever? Demontis Sabonis. Here's a 6'10". 230 power forward, obviously famous name from Gonzaga. You know, that would be more of a guy who would fit what we talk about fitting into your starting type rotation. Would he start right away? I don't know that he would, but would fit a little bit more in with the group that we're talking about. And as a young guy, would be age-wise. DeJounte Murray out of Washington, who's 6'5", combo guard. Again, backcourt, how much do you need backcourt? You got Stuckey, you got Miles, you got Monte Ellis at this point. How much do you need that? Torian Prince, a small forward out of Baylor, he's 6'7". How about, you know, is that what you want? Damian Jones, a center out of Vanderbilt. Thon Maker, who, you know, we've heard about here in Indiana, 7'1", power forward, they list him at. This thin guy, but would a versatile guy like that be what
Where
they
need?
Where
did he play basketball last year?
He didn't.
That's probably yeah,
well,
that
Canada,
one.
But.
Sure.
Right.
But against who?
Right.
He wasn't in some kind of league. He was working out. He was getting drafted. Am I going to go to school? Am I not going to go to school? Am I going to visit here? Am I going to visit
there? But here
there?
We get into the high level type talents, if you will, are going to be the younger guys. And are these the guys that you got to sit around and wait on a couple years to be ready to be real NBA contributors? Or do you go with a Bryce Johnson or somebody like that that's been around for 4 years? I mean, it's a fascinating question. I think you want to find, to me, this team could use at this point more strength down low. Because Miles Turner, you got to love what you see out of Miles Turner. Does he strike you as a guy that's going to go in there and dominate inside all the time? He looks to me more like a four. Love the guy. I mean, you love the player, but you seem to have a lot of offensive chances with this team. You need a guy to do a little bit of the dirty work.
You do. And do you take a chance on a Euro guy? Do you take a chance on somebody that it's tough? And I don't think it's tough to be the Pacers right now, but I'm at Pacers.com, the website. Mm-hmm. Videos and stories on 42 prospects at Pacers.com/draft. Well, that's the thing. You have to do that. You have to do your homework.
Sure.
And you have to figure out what guys need the ball, don't want the ball, who will play for the cause, who won't play for the cause. It'd be nice if you had that Solomon Hill one more year stuck on there, because that would be a piece that slides right in. But you don't, so you have to get after it. And I'm not crazy about young guys from non-big leagues unless someone has done all their homework on them.
Right.
Again, what am I going to tell you? I've watched Murray State play? No, I haven't. No. So I'm not going to sit here and explain that that's a good pick or not. Miles Turner last year, more questions than answers. Didn't play a lot for Texas. Wasn't involved all the time. Mm-hmm. We saw
only averaged like 20 minutes a game, I think.
Exactly. Like most freshmen.
Yeah.
Just like Corey Maggette. Remember when he played at Duke that year? It's like, hey, I'm going pro. It's like, going pro? You played 30 minutes a game. But again, that's part of how it goes on. I think the smart play is erase the point guards, unless you're going to package them up with somebody and move them and get something for them.
Right.
So you can take out those guys. You can just take the marker and go through them. The next thing you look for, three, you got George. You got, I don't know, a center at 20. Is there a center at 20? It's worth taking at 20. That's why I still think you're going to find an offensive guy. I have to lean Bryce Johnson. I don't love his emotional makeup. Now, that's me watching him on television. I'm not running him through the Wonderlic basketball version test. Sure. But what I saw was he's real high.
Yeah, right.
And those guys at the NBA don't tend to work out. Tyler Hansbrough is a high motor guy that was real emotional and rah. And it just never at that. You got to be cool at that level.
Right.
If you want to get into it with Steph and LeBron, good. You got to be Steph and LeBron to get into that stuff. Mm-hmm. So you either go find a guy who's going to give you a physical presence, do the dirt of rebounding, getting some stuff around the glass, step out and hit some jumpers, or you get a guy like Johnson who can do everything. Why is he the 20th pick? That's another question you got to ask yourself. Is it because of his age? Because you know he can shoot the basketball. You know he's hugely long. He's hugely athletic. I can take a chance on that if I want to get up and down the court. Mm-hmm. That jumps out at me. Bentel seems to be the guy if you want more rebounds, tougher inside stuff. If they're there, they're there. If not, better get that whiteboard out and get that eraser going down the line.
You mentioned an interesting name, though, and that's Solomon Hill. You know, this is a guy who might get some money thrown at him. He might get some money thrown at him by the Pacers.
He might.
Be nice to bring him back into the fold, but you're obviously not going to overpay for the guy after you told him to hit the road.
No, and the other problem is, look how long it took him to figure it out.
Exactly right.
And well, how's he going to react if he gets a big contract?
And how long did he actually figure it out?
2 months.
Out of 3 years, he got 2 months. Is that really what, you're buying on?
That is why Pritchett and Bird have to not get this right, but if you're going to sign Hill, there's going to be no home team discount. It's going to be more money than probably somebody will drive that price up, because in the NBA it happens every season. That's mm-hmm. like Mahimi. People say, well, why don't you just sign Mahimi? Well, because someone's going to go out and give him 4 for $44.
Right.
That's why.
Insane, yeah.
If that's going right, when the cap goes up, all tides, mm-hmm. the high tide rises all boats, or whatever that is. But the thing with Hill, you have to remember, is he wasn't motivated as a first-round draft pick.
Right.
Why is a big contract all of a sudden going to motivate
him? That's a good question.
So that's Bird and Pritchett. That comes down to them, and if anybody tells you they can figure that out, well, that's not accurate. These guys are around him. Bird claims he got him. He should thank us for getting him paid in the league for doing this.
I don't mean he's going to sign with us.
But it also means he's been around McMillan. He's mm-hmm. been around Bird and knows the very harsh expectations of playing for Bird.
Mm-hmm.
How many miles did he go from Fort Wayne to Indianapolis back and forth?
Yeah.
Did he take the dirty dog, the silver dog, the greyhound? I don't think the Pacers got a team helicopter that gets you up there. So what has he learned? That's going to be interesting to find out as free agency moves on. The deal with Teague and all that, that's like July 5th, right? Whenever the moratorium hits.
I said early July.
Because the draft hits and it's 2 weeks after the draft, so whatever that Thursday is, I think, after 2 weeks from Thursday. Is it a week from Thursday? The draft is the 23rd.
It's the beginning of July.
The draft is early this year because there's there's five Thursdays in June, so it should be around the 6th at midnight or the 7th of July.
Blue Thursday or something, like a blue moon? I don't know why.
No, the summer solstice, though, full moon. Next time that'll happen is 2065. Oh. Party at your house.
I'll be there.
For that one. On that.
I'll be 95.
All right, let's give away those Reds tickets. I said 6:45. Sure. We'll help the loyal listeners who are here early tonight. We will let you pick. You have a pair for 7:10 next Tuesday, Cubs and Reds, Great American Ballpark, lovely Cincinnati, Ohio. Or if you want to skip work, 12:35 on Wednesday. So you can pick whichever one's easier in your schedule. But we're only going to have one winner for that pair. You're just going to pick which one of the pair you would like to use. 812-333-2665. If you want to head to Cincinnati to see the Reds and Cubs next Tuesday or Wednesday, your choice.
Give us a ring, and we will be back in just a few minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. We'll right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Good job, Carrie Liff. She was our big winner of the Cubs and Reds tickets. Carrie's heading to Cincinnati next week to enjoy a little baseball. Reds and Cubbies will have the game right here on the airwaves for you. And thanks to Carrie for listening. And we've got one more pair of tickets we'll give away on the morning show coming up a little bit later this week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And we have more Cubs tickets to give away throughout the year. If you can't possibly wait for such an opportunity, head down to Royal Toyota Scion. They're at 3115 South Walnut. They are our big sponsors, our headline sponsor of Reds baseball. They are having a drawing for a family four-pack. This is for the 21st August game against the Dodgers. You have until July 12th. The drawing takes place at 4 p.m., so get there and give yourself a little bit a little bit extra time on that. One per family, please, is all we ask, and you can score some free Reds tickets that way as well. Thanks to the Cincinnati Reds for being a great partner, and you can catch them tonight. 8 o'clock in Texas, Game 2, Jay Bruce last night, 4 RBIs, 3-run shot in the first inning, got the Reds a lead. Anthony DeSclafani, 7 strong innings, and Raisel Iglesias. He pitched 2 one-hit innings out of the bullpen. That's a good sign. He has been hurt, and he is getting back into shape. Reds need all the arms they can find. Cole Hamels tonight, and you know how good Mr. Hamels is. Mm-hmm. I believe he's 8-1 for the Rangers, and Dan Straley for the Reds.
8 o'clock tonight. We got them 7 o'clock the next two nights as they are home to San Diego. 4 o'clock on Saturday against San Diego. 812-333-2665. So when we talked on Monday, we were all looking forward to how the U.S. soccer team would do against the number one ranked team in the world, Argentina, in the Copa America Centenario being hosted in the United States because, of course, we have all the money and TV eyes. But we got to play at home in Houston against Argentina. It took all 3 minutes for Argentina to put one on the board and for the U.S. Defensively to make a mistake. And that's kind of been their bugaboo. Glass, I know there's some back and forth. I think this U.S. team played pretty darn well for most of the time against Colombia. Made a couple big, bad mistakes, and that's what gets you beat sometimes, and it did.
But the two things that stand out with the Colombia and Argentina game, they didn't make two big, bad chances. That was the problem. Their biggest chance was, just missed free kick against Colombia. You're not going to beat anybody that way.
No, they did. Offensively, they didn't ever get in a dangerous position. And against Argentina, not only did they never get in a dangerous position, really offensively, they got in some really bad positions defensively. Argentina, understandably, dominated possession. You kind of knew that going in. If you know these two teams, that was going to be the case, but it was even worse than I think most people thought it would be. And then Argentina just made him pay. Argentina is that good.
Lionel Messi makes is everybody that
good.
Pay.
Higuain is that good. So when you give them those chances, chances are they're going to burn you for them. And they did. And it doesn't help when some of your best players, we say this in every sport we talk about it, it does not help you at all when your best players, the guys you count on the most, are making some of your biggest mistakes. And Michael Bradley and Brad Guzan just made some bad plays in this game. And those are the two guys you just couldn't have.
It doesn't.
If Clint Dempsey misses over the bar a couple times, hopefully you get another chance.
Sure.
But chances are he's not going to blow it up at that back end and get you scored on.
The problem is when you play Argentina, you have to be essentially perfect. You have to be essentially perfect and lucky. You have to be essentially perfect, lucky, and ready to play. And that's the thing that bothered me last night. You give up a goal that quickly off a play where guys aren't paying attention. Remember, Lavezzi, who scored the goal, is a forward. A forward unmarked off a corner kick is nothing but who's got him, I got him, you got him. So within 5 minutes, they weren't ready to handle a situation like that. And if Guzan's shouting out, 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 and everybody's getting out, somebody sticks around and marks the forward. You're not going to catch an offside trap there, especially with Messi on the ball. So number one,
there was a defender that should have been on him that didn't.
Whoever's job to mark him it was, there was nobody in 10 yards of him. Did Guzan make the right play coming off his line? I don't think so because where the ball was flighted,
he should have committed, but
he couldn't get to it.
It's a hard decision.
So you sit there, and, well, Lavezzi gets a shot. He could have chested it down and smashed it home. The point was he was wide open. The point was he's wide open in the first few minutes. Mm-hmm. That was the bad news. The other bad news for the USA was, their big players didn't fire. And if your big players don't fire against Argentina, I don't really care what they do against St. Kitts and the Grenadines. It doesn't interest me. Sure. It doesn't interest me if you score 4 goals against Canada on a Tuesday night in March. And that doesn't do it for me. So you're holding of those who are expected more or whatever that line is, those are the guys that have to play well. So first goal, it's kind of a team breakdown because you've got the keeper in no man's land. You've got a guy marked wide open off Messi's delightful pass.
It wasn't even close to
the other point of that
being covered.
The other point of that is with Argentina and possession, if you're upset at tactics and things like that, do you want to press Argentina the whole time and have them pick you apart and be four down at halftime? Or do you want to kind of sit back and let the game shorten up, keep them at arm's length, keep them outside the box firing off shots? You have to think more than that. What players do you have that can possess the ball, hold the ball, knock it around? The USA simply isn't good enough. The analogy people were asking me about last night, I simply told them, think of the U.S. playing Argentina in basketball with our best NBA players.
Right, exactly.
It's the exact same thing. Exactly. So don't get mad at Argentina if you're Argentinian because they can't stop LeBron James and whoever else. It doesn't happen that way. The U.S. has given you flashes over the years, but if you took the best United States team that was ever – you take the best 11 guys from 1994 to right now, they would have lost by 3 goals last night, not 4. That's how good Argentina is. Yeah. Argentina left Sergio Aguero, Eric Lamela, and Angel Di Maria on the bench last night.
Yeah.
They would start every game ever.
Oh, these are Champions League type quality guys. I mean,
$50 million transfer tickets.
Yeah, absolutely.
$35 million and up, whatever they paid for Lamela at Spurs. Yeah. How good a season did they have? But the point is, our bench was something we sat on. Their bench was 3 world-class players.
Right.
That's what they do. They're really good. They beat you. Was Guzan at fault for the second goal? He absolutely was. You saw the great shot behind the wall.
Mm-hmm. Him jumping.
There's two things
the
what you have to do. You have wall side and you have goal side.
Yeah. You put the wall
first
there to
move
cover
was
half your goal.
Wall side. Well, there's no point in having a wall if your goalie's
going
to cheat
that way. That's right.
And guess what happens when you give Messi a quarter of an inch?
Yeah, he takes it. Man.
Well, he did.
What a
great goal?
Shot.
It absolutely was. But if Guzan doesn't cheat and stays there, it's
1-0. He covers it.
Maybe you get to halftime and you have a whole different set of circumstances.
Right.
Does Tim Howard do that? I don't know. He didn't play. People on Twitter were saying we're upset in that game with guys not even on the roster. That's why we're going to lose the game. Well, look, just who cares about that? How about the guys that are here right now? The guy Jones is suspended. Can't do anything about it.
Right.
Wood is suspended. Can't do anything about it. Bedoya is suspended. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Those suspensions didn't cost the U.S. the game.
No, because let's talk about those guys in particular because
they didn't cost
none of those three guys are so dominant in possession that it would have held more of the ball than they held last night. And when they did get the ball last night, they were so quick to be pressured to give it up that the United States is not anywhere near as precise as the best teams in the world with the ball anyways.
And that's what's
and
disappointing.
And when you get the kind of pressure that Argentina put on them, then on top of that just exacerbates it. And you saw the incredible difference. Because the United States is trying now to put that kind of pressure on people defensively. But it didn't phase Argentina in the least
bit. It doesn't because they're technically sound. So and our technically
better,
best midfielder had his worst game. Michael Bradley couldn't handle the ball and the pressure in the middle of the park. That's bad because guys around him have to play off him and through him, and it wasn't his night. That's bad when it's not his night, when it's not Guzan's night, when it's not John Brooks' night. We'll talk about goal number 3 here in a minute. And Clint Dempsey never got in the fight. That's the other problem about having a 33-4-year-old guy up front in a game where you've got to run and chase. He's gone.
Right.
He's not helping you because he's not that guy to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So did you want some experience in the lineup? You absolutely did. If Dempsey needs one touch to tie the game, of course you try that as long as you can. But the other thing that was frustrating in the first 10 minutes of the game, second set piece, inside Argentina's half, we had 3 white shirts in the box. 3.
Mm-hmm.
When else were you expecting possession to get a chance?
Right.
Bomb everybody forward. You're already down a goal.
Yeah.
You obviously don't want to get hit on the counter,
but guess what? At some point, you have to
give something. So keep your small, fast guys back and your big galoots up front.
And that's what Klinsmann has talked about, you know, this United States attitude that we go get
but
things.
But it was a laissez-faire free kick.
And I love that, but that's not showing it that way.
No.
That's showing it that you're afraid to give something up. And you understand that against Argentina, but you know what? At that point in time, what's the difference?
The knock on last night would be if you wanted to get ready for the next stage of whatever this is, how do you not play the 17-year-old kid down 3-0 and give him some time against one of the best sides in America?
Well, they put him in at halftime.
Do you start him to give him that opportunity? No, because you need Dempsey for that one chance. You need
Wandolowski's the question.
He's a smarter
He did is he went with the guys that he's more used to, the guys that are more used to this group.
Yes.
Zusi has played in every game,
and
I believe. Beckerman has played in several of these.
That was tactically
Wandolowski's been around forever. He's using the veterans against the best team. Do you throw the a 17-year-old out there and the other guy that's barely played with the men's team, Nagbe, against the best team in the world.
Yes.
That's a gamble. I mean, that's a total gamble.
And why you do that is if you're looking anywhere to the future, down 3-0 against Argentina, you're not coming back.
Oh, down 3-0, yes. I'm talking about starting the game. I'm talking about starting the game. That's the question. No, I think he made the right choices with guys that are this team is used to playing and they are used to playing with him. Those guys, I think I was fine. You know, Wondolowski, I just don't love anyways. But, you know,
he did a job. Wondolowski wasn't winning or losing them the game. He had a chance to win it if he took his chance. He didn't.
Well, these things happen. Also fouled Messi on the one free kick chance.
Again, Guzan does his job.
Not the only guy who did anything wrong. Right. No question about that.
And then goal three bothers you as well because it summed up the U.S. for me on the entire night. The finish was fine, whatever. No problem. But when you see the offside, am I going, am I staying, am I going? Do one or the other.
Right.
You're John Brooks. You've played enough of these now. You played a whole World Cup.
Yeah.
Don't give me I'm going to step, I'm not going to step, and I get caught in between two and I keep them onside.
Mm-hmm.
Pick and choose. Commit. Lay off them. These guys are really super players. Yep. So you can't give them that. You give Messi an inch on a free kick he scores. You give offsides by an inch on goal number three. They mm-hmm. score. They put you to the sword every single. You don't mark off a first corner every single minute. Didn't lead to shots, big saves, hit the post. That luck we were talking about.
Right, exactly right.
They got nothing. Right, yeah, they scored, and he put you to the sword. And you know what good teams do? That.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why they're number one in the world.
That's why they're number one in the world. And that's what, a two-year collecting thing.
But you can say Germany won the World Cup, whatever that was.
Yeah, but it's based on recent results. I mean, it's how they're playing, and they're playing
well. Belgium's number two in the world, and I argue that's probably not accurate. But Argentina, when Messi is healthy, yes, they do lose games. Everybody loses games. But when you gift them those things, getting back into that game is the impossibility.
Yeah.
That's the tough part because you weren't set up to break them down. You weren't set up to get at them because I don't think you have the players. The best angle for the U.S., I believe, in that game would have been draw of some sort, get the penalties, and try to steal it. Because if you go toe-to-toe,
you wouldn't have to pack the box in necessarily, but you did have to play defensively. You had to be solid.
They packed in. They tried to cut passing lanes off. They tried to hold Argentina in spots where they didn't find them to be as dangerous. But when you give them three on a platter, that's what's going to happen. The fourth goal, who cares about? You're down 3-0. You could have scored six more. Wouldn't have mattered one bit. So what do you learn from it? You learn that the U.S. picked up themselves, dusted them off after Colombia, found a way to find goals against Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
You found the recreation of Clint Dempsey. Where's Jozy Altidore? Where's Aaron Johansson? Those are guys that could they help you? Yeah, they could absolutely help you. When they're not there, the American excuse can't be suspended or hurt, we've got no chance.
Sure.
That's a systemic failure.
Yeah, if
you don't have enough players in your pool of quality to replace. If Argentina didn't start Lavezzi, Aguero, Di Maria, Lamela.
Yeah, world-class players.
That's
the question.
That's the difference. And until you make a commitment at a level that does not involve here's what we don't do. We see how the rest of the world runs youth systems. We don't do it that way. We do it our way.
Mm-hmm.
We see how the rest of the world runs their leagues. We don't do it that way. We bring in guys and ownership-based because it's a financial thing. Everything we do in the United States is about making money and making money, not about developing soccer players.
Right.
That's a big question. And until that question gets an answer, you will find teams with thin squads, MLS signing the Frank Lampards and Steven Gerrards of the world, and you'll be some days 2002, hey, look at us. And some days you'll be 2000 whatever, going, geez, what happened?
I'll tell you what was interesting is Alexi Lalas made this comment that right before the game talking about the lineup that was being thrown out there. The entire front seven
MLS.
Of the United States was entirely MLS.
And the back was all foreign.
And the entire front seven, let's be fair, they could not hold possession to save their lives. They could not create chances. Now, again, they're outclassed against Argentina. They were 6-1 favorites for a reason.
Sure.
This is not exactly surprising about it. But the fact of the matter is that MLS is not going to compete with those guys.
The question they're going to have to ask themselves is, you can want to play attacking, beautiful soccer, but if you don't have the players to do it, is that the best way to get results?
Right.
And it shouldn't be based on what the fans think. It should be.
No, U.S. has gotten some results in the past by playing all mostly defensive and,
you can
and just
have
packing it in a bit.
Counterattacking players. You can have pace that does that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to tiki-taka like Barcelona,
or
if you want to knock
enough.
The ball around like Argentina,
you got
to have
enough.
The players to do it.
They weren't
so
good
American fans have to make up their mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have a big, strong, athletic team that defends well, holds up shop, hard to score on, and right. might nip you on a set piece? Think Greece 2004.
Sure, big physical team. Sure, they've done that.
Well, what do? We do big physical here.
That's what I'm saying.
We don't do technically good because our system isn't set up for it. That's right.
With soccer. That's correct. That's exactly right. We've never had a dearth of a whole bunch we've got of a, technically we've got sound players.
In the New York Times, there's a impressive. Great piece in the New York Times. Go read it. It's about how the soccer setup is bad here because the wrong people, i.e. rich people who have money, are the only ones that get involved. Mm-hmm. And you leave out a huge segment of the population that's quote-unquote better.
Yeah.
And until you fix that, you've got a problem. We got a problem on yes. time. We better take a quick break and come right back. How about
exactly that? Right. 812-333-2665 is the phone number.
Just because the U.S. gets beat by Argentina doesn't mean they stink.
Oh, not
no,
at
don't,
all.
Don't think about that. That's not it. It's just the expectation has to be leveled.
It's the wake-up call when you face number one team in the world and get it handed to you.
Go win third place, beat Chile or Colombia, get your revenge, and on your way.
You know what? IU football gets beat pretty bad at Michigan and Ohio State sometimes.
Still go to a bowl game.
Got to take that quick break. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is our phone number. Argentina moves on to the finals of Copa America. U.S. plays in the third place game on Saturday.
Right.
And they will play the loser of Colombia and Chile.
Wouldn't mind to see Colombia again.
Yeah, again, I thought the U.S. played very well against Colombia. But again, it's that defense, and it's a mistake here and a mistake there, and that'll kill you. I mean, that'll kill you against good teams.
And you saw this against Argentina. There's two things that change football matches, goals and goals.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And if you give them and don't get them, that's a huge thing. Again, Messi, you do your job on his free kick,
right.
and maybe you tip it off the bar.
Right.
Maybe you get that just hair
of
luck. And
it's still 1-0.
And in halftime, that's a huge difference yes. than 2-0 because Absolutely. All you need is one set piece here, one corner there.
Right.
And at down 1-0 is no different than being 0-0 or you're in it. You're in the game.
Because with one goal.
Argentina wasn't going to play any differently.
Yeah.
You weren't going to play any differently because you know you just are looking for that one chance.
Right.
At 2-0 down,
right.
that's when you have to start moving pieces forward
yeah, exactly
and taking
right.
some chances, exposing yourself, getting your lines caught out. But goals change football matches. How many goals did USA score against Colombia?
Zero.
Well, that's the issue. You can play well and not get a result, but it wasn't like Colombia's goalkeeper did Rene Higuita, stood on his head and knocked everything out of the park.
Right, they didn't give him a lot of
They
chance.
Didn't have anything yeah. much to do. It was a free kick right. from Dempsey, right, and it was about it.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of glaring, oh my gosh, chances. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the problem you knew you were going to have against Argentina, so that mm-hmm. was tough to have your best players not fire on that level. It was tough to have all your substitutes really not make a difference in that game at
yeah.
all, except the kid that took his eye off the ball and then get the fourth goal on that. That's bad. That's what happens. It didn't cost the U.S. the game. The kid will never forget that the rest of his life. It's either mm-hmm. a greatest learning experience ever or he's out of the rotation.
Sure.
So
sure.
you learn something. But what you learn from the U.S. is they can't play at 80% of their ability against anybody because they don't have match winners. You can have a guy like Zlatan Ibrahimovic just walking around the park one day and turns a bicycle kick on you and wins 1-0. They
right.
don't have that je ne sais quoi. They don't have that player.
Dempsey's the closest thing.
He is, but
let's
it has
be
to
fair.
Be really good.
Yeah, it's
it
about
has
over.
To be perfect
I mean,
for that to work.
I like Clint right now.
Yes.
I don't have any problem with him playing all
Clint
these games.
Clint can help you through qualifying.
Exactly
he can help
right.
you through a lot of things. But if he's not at his best at that level, that's tough. Where's Josie Altidore? Where's Johansson? They're
right.
injured. Those are things that hopefully mm-hmm. organically heal themselves. And then you put those guys into the mix because those are guys that are 25, 24, 23 years old.
Right.
Those are guys that can help in that system. But when you got to steal a guy from Iceland, you got to find six guys from German army bases,
yeah.
wake up.
Yeah.
Wake up.
That means we don't have them here.
Wake up.
And look, other parts of the world, they'll grab a guy here and there.
One or
but
two.
Not half their team.
Exactly right. Yeah. And you know who they'll grab over there? The best one.
Yeah, exactly.
Not all of them.
Right.
And hope you shake them out in a pan and see what they work.
Yep.
That's the USA's problem. They've got plenty of speed. They've got plenty of guile. They usually turn out good goalkeepers. The guys they have can play at a level, but they're not at a winning level. They don't have match winners. And what does that mean? A guy that needs one chance, a guy that can hold the ball and boss. Tab Ramos was a great example of that. Claudio
sure.
Reyna was a great example
Absolutely.
Of that. Guys that played at another level where guys could play around them and not have to worry about all that dirty work and all the pressure of having to sit and hold the ball all the time. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not a knock on Bradley. He didn't play well last night. That's a fact. Yeah. I still like the U.S. I still root for him. They didn't play well last night. And if that's down to tactics for you, or you don't like Juergen, I don't buy it.
No, I buy that
we don't have enough bullets in the gun.
No, it wasn't about tactics last night. It was about talent, and that's what happens.
Name the team that stopped Messi.
Well, exactly.
Go ahead and point him out to me. What
five-time player of the year in the world?
Doesn't even matter.
Yeah, you give him that chance, he's going to take
it. But again, you didn't do the simple things right.
Right.
And if you're worried about technical ability and playing a certain style, if you're not doing your job right, you're never going to get to that point. It won't matter.
Nope. Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. When we get back Monday, we'll talk about the Pacers draft, and we'll also see if the United States can jump back against either Chile or Colombia. And more to come, I'm sure, also on Monday. We will talk to you then. Stay tuned. 8 o'clock tonight, Reds baseball. Not too far off, so don't go anywhere. You've been in the zone.